Thanks for being here, folks. It is November 16th, 2018. Time is flying, and so are we. The weather is beautiful. 58 degrees in the middle of November. We're taking off our layered clothing. And, of course, the arts are, as ever, taking off. And I've got some really wonderful things for you today. I do want to dedicate this show to healing, and especially to some people, and you can take it in your heart and spread it around to your chosen ones. First to Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. May her ribs heal stronger than ever, and she live bisahuna and svansig. It's a little expression which means till 120. I'm not sure she would appreciate, but she would. She knows where it comes from. Also want to send that out to Hope, good friend of the station, of the town, and of mine, and to Fred in North Tillamook County. Hope you're coming along. And to Lulu. And I won't go into any details, just to tell you we're sending out healing wishes and the best. And I'm going to start right out with a person who's a real healer around here, because he just keeps putting out the good stuff. And that would be our good friend, Dr. Robert Michael Pyle, a.k.a. Bob.
Hi, Carol. Thank you for those sweet words.
Well, it is true. I don't know, because you're out and about all the time. You're here in Astoria, and I'm sure everywhere else, at the Grange, perhaps. Plus, you're flying here, there, and everywhere. And yet, you're putting out books constantly, and all different kinds of what I'm very excited about, this newest. This is your, correct me if I'm wrong, your debut novel?
Yes, it is.
That's fantastic. Magdalena Mountain. And so you've got, what, 17 books out or something?
22.
22 now. Oh, my God.
And we just, I've got two coming next year, another collection called Nature Matrix, and they just found out 2 days ago I'm going to be having a book coming out this next year in 2019 on the Lower Columbia River. It's called The Reach, and it's pictures and poems of the Lower Columbia. And it's a collaboration I've been working on for a long time with Judy Vandermaten, the wonderful photographer from Kathlamet.
Wonderful.
One of my favorite photographers.
Yes.
And we've put this book idea together for a very long time. And we finally have a publisher for that.
That is so exciting. So what is your part then? Is it poetry?
Poetry.
That'll be
poems inspired by the Columbia, all the way from the Bar to Bonneville.
Nice.
Lots of different kinds of poems. By no means just descriptive. And I'm not describing her pictures, nor do her pictures describe my poems. Mm-hmm. We're kind of refracting off each other.
Right. And for those who may not recognize the name, Judy Vandermaten actually was one of our guest and featured photographers for the Spirit of the River.
Right.
From the Columbia Benefits for the Columbia River Keeper. And her photo was chosen for the thank you pieces. So I've got it hanging in my bedroom.
That's right.
And it's just beautiful.
Oh, it's a wonderful picture. And one thing we're going to have in the book is that picture opposite a portion of the piece that I wrote when I was a featured reader for Spirit of the River.
Right.
Called Where Does Water Go? Where Does It Come From? Something like that.
Oh, perfect. Oh, that's terrific. Okay. Now, and the other books that are coming out, are they also poetry?
The next book that's coming out along with that is, I do have another collection of poems coming probably next year or the next, but this other one is called Nature Matrix, New and Selected Essays. And it's some essays that did not appear in my book Through a Green Lens, 50 Years of Writing for Nature, but that still, I think, need a further life, along with some new ones. And that'll come out from Counterpoint Press as well. But, Carol, I've got to tell you one more piece of little good news that I just got yesterday.
Ooh.
The other new book I have out this year is called Butterflies of the Pacific Northwest. It's a really very beautiful field guide, thanks to my co-author, Caitlin Labar, who handled the pictures and the digit part. Mm-hmm. And that book's from Timber Press. And I just found out yesterday that it has won a National Outdoor Book Award.
Oh, Bob. It's, oh, my God. This is so exciting.
Which I won an earlier one for Skytime and Grays River. So that's,
right, which you is know, things, fantastic.
I'm an old guy, but things seem to keep going.
You're not getting younger, and yet you are. You are because you're so productive. As a matter of fact, when did you start doing publishing poetry or reading your poetry out loud? How long ago was that?
Well, I first read my poetry in an old beatnik coffee house in Seattle back in the 60s, okay. But it was really bad.
Yeah,
I didn't start seriously making poetry a big part of my life until I started traveling with the Orion Society's Forgotten Language Tours. Mm-hmm. I was reading prose mostly, mm-hmm. a group of writers who write about more than the strictly human. You could say nature writers, but mm-hmm. that's all writing. Going around the country and reading here and there. And I got to travel and read with poets like Patty Ann Rogers and Alison Deming, somebody, Kim Stafford, wonderful poets. And it made me think about my poetry more. And ever since then, 20 years or so, I've been spending a lot more time on mine. So I have 3 books of poems and working on another. And I have to say that I've grown in a big way through my association with the poets of Astoria, mm-hmm. especially Florence Sage and mm-hmm. Jim Dott and John mm-hmm. Simonello, my countrymen over there, but lots of others. This is a great town for poetry.
It's very exciting.
And people should come to Rick's Mic on the first Tuesday of the month to hear some of the best local
poetry.
Absolutely.
It's a good time.
7 o'clock at Winecraft.
And you don't even have to. You can bring poetry, your own or others, but you can also just come and enjoy. It's a lovely, lovely gathering.
Yes, you recently brought a poem of someone else that moved everyone in the room.
It was a powerful piece, and I appreciated having people who, although they weren't necessarily connected to the event, they got it because they understand the poetry. However, this time, it's a novel. Now, how long did it take you to do the novel?
Yeah, people say, why a novel now after all those nonfiction books? Well, it is published after a lot of nonfiction books, but I actually began it in 1974. So I've been working on this book for
44 years
and 10 complete drafts.
Oh, my God.
It was my apprenticeship in fiction, Carol.
I see. Definitely. Did you plan... When you first started writing it, were you charged up to write it and publish it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Nobody plans to spend 40 years on a book. I mean, this is the art of deferred gratification, no matter what you do, but you don't count on that much deferred gratification.
That's fantastic.
And actually, I came fairly close 2 or 3 times to different publishers along the way, and my agent liked it and everything. But my my longtime agent, Harry Foster at Houghton Mifflin, said mm-hmm. way back in the 90s, he said, Bob, this is a fine and wonderful novel. Please don't publish it. Which I think he meant it had merit, but it wasn't ready.
Right.
It was callow and overwritten.
So have you been working it recently as well?
Yes. It had to always come between my nonfiction books, which had contracts, mm-hmm. and other jobs that I've done and mm-hmm. everything in life. So it's always been in the edges. But every now and again, I've had a grant to take a residency to work on mm-hmm. it, or I've simply given myself one. And so the 9th draft came very close to publishing with Milkweed. But one editor there gave me a superb reading on it, as did Florence Sage. And between the two, which were very consistent, 2 tough editors, I felt I knew what it needed, gave myself another residency, rewrote it the 10th time, and then took it on the train down to the editor whom had expressed some interest in it, who had expressed some interest in that in Berkeley at Counterpoint Press. Wonderful Press. I'm so honored to be there. It's the publisher of Wendell Berry and mm-hmm. Gary Snyder and so on. And he took it. So now it's out.
Very exciting.
Thank you.
Are you feeling a little, you know, sort of after so much, this has been part of you for so long and now it's going out to the world?
Postpartum depression, yes. Yeah. Not depression, but I'm missing working on it. And in fact, I'm gymming up to start another novel that might even be sort of like a sequel. Okay, I miss the process. It's so much fun.
That's what I was wondering.
I never got tired of it, Carol, and I do miss actually working on it, mm-hmm. though it's a lot of fun to be going out and reading it and sharing it with people.
So for those people who aren't local, and even local people who may not know Bob Pyle, I would put naturalist before author. But with 22 books, I think I have to switch it out and put author and naturalist.
Either way, I'm happy with both words.
Whatever you write, whether it's obviously the nonfiction, but the poetry and now the novel, there's a lot of your, I mean, I don't think you can stop. I remember when I first read Grace River, those little, they're short essays, but I could barely get through. They were so dense and so luscious. Mm. One at a time, it was like a very rich dessert that you only ate one of.
Well, that's
and
how
full
essays
of
can
images.
Commonly be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you have so many images from the natural True. World that many of us just aren't familiar with.
Right.
So what did you do in this book? Give us a kind of an overview. Magdalena Mountain, where does the name come from?
I will indeed. Magdalena Mountain comes from a butterfly called the Magdalena Alpine. It's depicted on the title page. It's all black. It's the only all-black butterfly in the world, about 2 inches across. Lives in the high Colorado Rockies and some adjacent states and provinces, but it mostly in Colorado, and it flies down the rock slides in pursuit of its mate. I mean, high, 10 to 14,000 feet. I fell in love with that butterfly as a young Lepidopterist butterfly catcher in when I was 12 years old. My 12th birthday, wow. I first met this butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
Always wanted to do something with it. I ended up doing research on it, studying it, and enjoying it in every way. But I wanted to write about it. My first effort was going to be a kid's book about the Magdalena Alpine, a juvenile or young reader's book about the life of one particular butterfly in this phenomenal habitat with the marmots and the pikas up high and the ravens in the rocks. But I became a little bored with that because I didn't know how to write properly for young readers. And also, I wanted to bring people more into the story, and I wanted to go more deeply into the butterfly than that would allow, because by this time I knew quite a bit about it. And so I made the book an experiment in which I'm trying to link the lives of animals with the lives of humans more explicitly than is often done. A lot of readers have done that, everybody from Thomas Hardy to John Steinbeck have nature writing in their fiction.
Some. Nothing
yours. Not all. but very few authors, and there are great animal books like Watership Down and Tarka the Otter and so on, but very few authors have actually given quite a bit of stage space to the animal, but also to the people. It tends mm-hmm. to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my experiment to try to appeal to the readers of my other books with some good solid nature writing, if you want to use that redundancy of a mm-hmm. phrase, but also with a good thumping, fully developed human novel. With it's not a murder mystery, though there is menace and the threat of violence in it, but it does contain mysteries within it. So it's a mystery book, but not a classic murder mystery. And so by telling the story, I hope to bring in readers who love fiction, but would never read the descriptive prose of the mountain.
Right.
The butterfly, it's a real butterfly, but one particular individual is explored through his life in the book in short chapters that alternate with the longer chapters of the Gathering Human story. And the butterfly serves to bring the characters together, four characters, all of whom have a deep connection to this butterfly in different ways. One's commercial, one's scientific, one's metaphysical, spiritual.
Let me
stop
you.
They come together because of the butterfly.
And do you
have then stuff happens.
I'm sure. Do you have something you could read for us, perhaps? And I do want to say that, or ask you, actually, do you know of many people who have a PhD in science who end up being prolific writers of not just science books? Does that make sense?
I know several PhD scientists or extremely gifted amateur scientists who do write for a broader audience, yes. But I know very few who have written fiction or poetry. They tend to stick more to the informational, even if they write with great clarity and beauty, mm-hmm. lyricism.
It's
so not very many. The only other novel I know that comes close to putting the people on the page as much as the animals like this is not a scientist, but the great late Brian Doyle, wonderful Oregon writer who died a couple years ago. And in his book, Martin, he does something like this.
You know, he was here once with you.
Yes, we read at the on the shore, yes.
Yeah. That was beautiful. Tell us what you're going to read. Set it up.
I'm going to read chapter one. It's a short chapter.
Okay.
There's no dialogue in this chapter, though the human chapters are full of dialogue and incident. But this is full of incident, and it brings both the human and the animal plant scene together at the very beginning. And then their stories tell one another, and then they come together and they merge, and toward the end they resolve again. If anyone doesn't know what a Karmann Ghia is, it was a very sporty model of a Volkswagen. Very, very pretty car that was built in the 60s and 70s. Really a sports car, but it was a Volkswagen. So, chapter one. The yellow Karmann Ghia left the road at 45. Its tires never scored the soft tissue of the tundra. It simply flew over the edge into the mountain abyss. A lookout marmot shrilled at the sight. A pair of pikas, young of the year, disappeared beneath their rock pile as the strange object passed overhead. Clearing the stony incline, the doomed auto glided over the rich mountain turf. Its shadow fell across a patch of alpine forget-me-nots, deepening their hue from sky to delft, and then passed over a pink clump of moss campion. A black butterfly, nectaring on the campion, twitched at the momentary shading. Such a shift of light often signaled a coming storm, sending the alpine insects into hiding among the sod or stones. But this cloud passed quickly, so the sipping butterfly hunkered only briefly, and then resumed its suck from the sweet-filled floret. A bigger black form took flight when the bright intruder entered its territory. The raven charged the big yellow bird to chase the interloper out of its airspace, succeeded, and resettled. As the slope fell away toward the canyon below, more than keeping pace with the glide path of the Ghia, so fell the yellow missile. Sky whooshed aside to make room for it. Otherwise, there was no sound but for three shrieks on the alpine air. A nutcracker's alarm scream, the whine of the engine, gunned by the foot glued to the Ghia's floorboard, and a third, muffled by the glass, growing into a hopeless wail. The thin alpine air parted before the plummeting car, smelling of green musk, of the high, great lawn that is the Colorado mountain tundra. The perfumes of 100 alpine wildflowers filled the grill of the Ghia, and soon the sweet mingled scents would be overcome by the rank fumes of oil and gasoline mixing with the terpenes of the torn evergreens as the grill split against pine and stone. But the rider smelled nothing. The air took on a chill as the projectile left the sunny upper reaches, crossed over timberline, and entered the shade of the upper forest. Never once had it touched down since takeoff, nor could it fly much farther. Gravity never ran out, but the earth rushed up at last to meet it. All the elements of the alpine earth, mineral soil, bare stone, grass, sedge, herb, shrub, and solid trunk of ancient liber pine mingled with the yellow metal when the Ghia went to ground. Almost nothing remained from this unplanned event to disturb the day above, where it began. The nutcracker returned to its snag, the marmot to its post, the raven to its rock. The black butterfly nectared on and then flew. The forget-me-nots still flowered low against the ground, and not even the green verge of the road betrayed anything amiss. Only a black rubber streak in the roadway gave away the launching spot. Even the golden-mantled ground squirrel, whose mad dash across the asphalt had started it all, lay not dead on the shoulder, but basking on a boulder nearby in the late summer sun, unabashed by her close call. And of the steaming yellow mass among the trees and rocks, 1,000 feet below, no one knew a thing. Bumblebees investigating the yellow spatter on the slope found battered, barren steel instead of woolly sunflowers. The Karmann Ghia's aberrant track would never be repeated, and for all the difference it made to the mountain, it might never have happened at all.
Whoa. Nice. The Karmann Ghia.
I hope that's such. Hey, Carol, I was at Duffy's in Grays River the other day, mm-hmm. and right out front was a beautiful yellow Karmann Ghia.
Oh,
and the people were sitting on the back porch, and this guy has a Colombian cafe.
Oh.
Or No, he doesn't.
You mean Uriah?
That's Uriah, but okay. No, he has a different... No, he has the theater, I think. Anyway, he had a Columbian theater. But he had this yellow Carmageddon. I went down and I said, hey, folks, the first four words of my new novel are the yellow Carmageddon.
That's great.
And I apologize for what comes after that.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Bob Pyle, Dr. Robert Michael Pyle at Kala. That's 1017 Marine Drive, tonight, 7:30 p.m., with his new novel, from which you heard a little bit, Magdalena Mountain, and he'll be reading and selling, and it's a delightful place, and this is Bob's debut novel, so join everybody this evening. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you, Carol, and an advance notice that on December 1st, Saturday at 6 p.m., Florence Sage and I are going to be reading two collections of poems about stories from our childhoods.
Right.
And you'll be telling more about that later on. Just an advance notice on that. But for now, I very much hope to see folks down at Kala tonight for what I hope will be an exciting reading from Magdalena Mountain. Thank you, Carol.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bob. Tonight. Got more happening tonight, too, so do stay tuned. Right now, I just wanted to play you one of the things that's happening is that the artist, the poet, Clem Stark is going to be reading together with John Broderick and Jay Speakman, who are our fabulous Fisher poets. They'll be playing music. Let's have a listen. This is happening at Tolovana Arts Hall in Cannon Beach this evening, and that is at let's see what time that's happening. It's at 7 o'clock, Cathedrals and Parking Lots. Clem's got a brand new book.
Hitchhiking. I was standing by the side of the road somewhere in Idaho, thumbing a ride. I was headed back east. From the map, I could see that the shortest way lay through Wyoming. Hitchhiking was my magic carpet, but it required perseverance and luck. What to do next, I wondered, while pondering schemes that involved Argentina or Iceland, and a system for playing the horses. Traffic was sparse, and no car stopped. So after 4 hours, I quit, walked back across town, started thumbing again, south this time, toward Utah.
That was Clem Starks, and he is again going to be tonight at Tolovana Arts Colony, and I've got my next guests here, and let's see, never a dull moment. He just handed me some music, but where is it? Well, we'll see. My next guests are not musicians. They are a visual artist. Well, she's a musician, too, actually. I think last time you were on was for the music, right?
I think so.
Betty Lou Krause is here. She does a little of everything. She is also a naturalist, as we were just talking to Bob Pyle. And she is, in addition, a musician, a singer, and plays guitar, but she's here today as a visual artist, and with her is Louisa Mack, who is a jewelry maker, does gorgeous stuff, and now, is this right? You have your own gallery?
Yes.
God, I love it. How that happened. Did you ever, was that your plan? Were you hoping for that?
Yeah, I was hoping I'd someday get the chance, but I didn't think it would come up that quick. So I'm really excited.
That is really exciting. So Louisa's been here also, but, it was Artport, right, that you started working with and showing your work, and slowly Artport got smaller and smaller, and the cheese stands alone. And here's Louisa with her own, and you can fill it up, so not a problem.
Yeah, and the great thing is now that I have all my tools down there, so I brought down my jeweler's bench and my tools and all my materials, so I'm open and I can work on my things and I can greet customers at the same time.
So it's like doing a demo all day.
Yeah, it's a demo all day long.
Studio gallery.
There you go. Ah, that's good. Is that sort of what you do during the year? Well, let's tell folks why you're here first. And that's because, we're not going to have the music yet. The Peninsula Arts Association Studio Tour is happening not this weekend, but next weekend, the 23rd and 24th. Is that right?
Friday and Saturday. Because we do it right after Thanksgiving.
Oh, because a lot of people are visiting and also are off at that time.
That's right.
Nice. So Friday and Saturday of next week. And the peninsula we're talking about, of course, is the Long Beach Peninsula, which is right across from Astoria, if you are Astoria-centric, as some of us might be. And otherwise, it's that wonderful, rich peninsula that just has taken off. How long have you been here, Betty Lou?
94. So
you came in 94.
A while.
Okay. And Louisa, you're new, but your family, your husband and his family, when did they come? Do you know?
So my in-laws, they moved from Germany.
That's
right.
And your husband was born here. I forgot.
Yeah, he was born here, but they came here in like 79.
Okay, because I've known them since they came, and I've been here since 74. But the amazing thing is that peninsula is a shining light now, and I can say it was always gorgeous, but it certainly wasn't the arts and culture mecca that it is now. For that matter, neither was Astoria or anywhere else. We had our galleries, but nothing like today. So what's going on next weekend?
Well, this is the 11th annual studio tour. Wow. And we've got lots of participants this year. We have 15 venues and 20 artists participating from Oysterville to Il Waco.
Wow.
So the
you've got basically the whole peninsula.
We've got the whole peninsula.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's really exciting. And we got lots of new artists as well as those of us who've done every tour. And
did you say the 11th annual? Who puts this on?
This is done by the Peninsula Arts Association. Myself and Linda Marsh are co-chairing it this year.
Have you been involved since the beginning?
Yes, I've chaired it every year but one.
See, they pick the busiest people and they make them the heads. Louisa, watch out. You may
be
next. But this is exciting. I'm seeing a whole clump of people. That may not be the right word, clump.
There are some clumps.
Clump. Way up at Oysterville area.
Well, number one up there is Harmony Soapworks, and they haven't been in it before.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Although they've provided, including to KMUN forever, with gifts and memberships. Wow. So are we going to be, we won't be seeing the process, though, will we?
I don't think they'd be able to do that during the tour, but there'll be lots of specials and
great, love their
wonderful
stuff.
Soaps. Yes, we love their stuff.
And then we move over to there on one of the cross streets?
Well, she's on T Lane. That's why
T it's... T Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, everyone, we're looking at maps here on
the
radio.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So this map will be published in next week's paper. Yeah, you're going to hold it up, Carol.
I'm holding the map.
Thank you.
Up to the microphone, folks.
And it's available on beachartist.org.
Good.
And at several of the locations on the peninsula as well. If you're in Iwako, stop by the galleries there, especially Skywater Gallery. If you're in Ocean Park, Bay Avenue Gallery has maps and a few other spots.
Okay. Right. And otherwise, when you get there...
Yes,
you can.
Every venue. And we have 100 signs, so there'll be little signs to take you to every place.
It's fun. It's
fun.
Really fun because you're driving along and you sort of know where something is, and suddenly you see a sign and you say, oh, that's it, and other cars. And wow.
Everyone will have food and beverages of some sort available.
Lovely. Yeah. Are you showing in your own home? Or
I have a home studio. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you've been there.
I have, but I wasn't sure because you are associated with galleries as well.
Yeah.
So, okay. And then what does mean the oyster? Oh, I see. The Oysterville store is the venue, but...
We have
two artists
that are going to be at the Oysterville store.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been mostly closed because Greg's been working in Seattle. So he's opening up that beautiful antique store, and a couple of our artists will be there.
Lovely. I don't think I've ever been. I've been at the Oysterville Church and the Oysterville School and, of course, the Espy House. But I, this is cool. Very cool. Okay. And, wow, mixed media shrines. This sounds fun. And Christmas ornaments. And then bird houses and garden globes. There's quite a bit of variety. Moving down just a tiny bit, impressing ideas. What's that?
This is Cindy and Robert, and they've opened a little shop in Surfside, just north of Ocean Park. It's part of Ocean Park. But it is mostly art supplies, but when you open the door, it's like walking into a treasure box. You just your imagination just flies. So they have mostly art supplies for sale, but they also offer gift certificates and classes.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things people might be shopping for
right,
their friends
right.
and family.
And then comes Betty Lou Krause, my guest. And what are you going to be showing?
Well... I have all my usual stuff from art t-shirts to ornaments and tiles and original paintings, but I've been working really hard painting small originals because people always say, I love your work, but I have no space. So I'm working on
like
things that will
fit. Like 6x6, perhaps?
Yeah, 6x6, 8x8, 12x12.
I have a couple of your 6x6s.
Oh, yay.
Yes. And Carol Couch.
Carol Couch is a longtime watercolor artist and instructor at the college over in Iwako.
Mm-hmm.
But this is her big party of the year. So she hosts Judy Cox and Nancy Myrick.
Mm-hmm.
And Judy does these exquisite cards. And Nancy is a nature photographer and, well, a peninsula photographer.
Mm-hmm.
So they also always have really exciting food.
I know. I remember.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, too, because it's fun to go into one house and have this diversity of stuff.
Yeah.
As well as good goodies.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Bay Avenue Gallery, of course, that's been involved forever. Oh, representing more than 50 local artists. Wow. I didn't realize it.
Bay Avenue Gallery is amazing. And,
nice.
Of course, so is Sue Raymond.
Yes. And her whimsical, for sure. I just watered just this morning, before I left home, I watered my garlic starts that are in one of Sue Raymond's whimsical ceramic animals from several years back. So.
Nice.
Okay. Andrea Weir. Oh, yeah.
Andrea Weir's been working in, like, every medium.
Mm-hmm.
So from glass to fused glass to jewelry. She does beaded jewelry as well, and drawing and painting in oil, painting in acrylic, painting in watercolor. She's kind of amazing. She's got like 4 studios on her property. So
yeah.
You could find a lot of interesting
and
stuff.
And get lost a little bit too. It's kind of fun. And then, of course, the Weigart Studio Gallery, which is kind of like a stalwart there. I just ran into the other half of the Weigart family, and she looked awfully familiar. And then she mentioned something about her husband, Eric, who's an artist. And I went, wait a minute, what's your last name? So, and that's also on Bay Avenue then? It says Bay Avenue, but is that
yes,
the same?
Yes, he is. Okay, Bay Avenue is that same cross street that the Weirs are on and the Gallery is on. It goes out to the ocean and of course, to the bay.
And then we keep going south a little bit to Long Beach. And you've got three different...
It's kind of in the center of the peninsula there between Ocean Park and Long Beach, but they're Long Beach addresses. So Joe Chassé, perhaps you've seen his stuff. It's crazy assemblage, fun things. I went out to kind of interview Joe last week a little bit, and he's his house is his studio, and the art flows out into the yard and over the fences and on the roof and in the garage. And it's amazing, and it's everywhere. That's he's great. Working so hard to get the place ready for the tour so people can really see what's there.
Nice.
A wonderful artist and a delightful, crazy person.
Wonderful kind of guy. Okay. The Hobbit Shop. Oh, Jim Unwin. Yes. Okay. Yeah. He's actually been over at the Astoria Art Loft. He showed his wood there. I've met him in various places.
Nice.
Functioning and fine art wood carving reflecting the Northwest experience. Neat. Linda Marsh
is another wonderful potter. Okay. She does some really big things to delightful ornaments and has a great studio out there on Birch Street. She's going to do a demo, and she also offers the occasional class, something you might inquire about while you're there.
And Karen Brownlee, we are quite familiar with her. I have, you know, I've been going to these things for a while. I have a lot of these names are familiar, and they're in my kitchen, too.
Great.
Or living room. She's stoneware pottery.
Karen loves color, and she wants you to feel joy when you pick up her work or use her plates and mugs.
Nice. That's beautiful. Explanation. And then we come to Louisa Mack, jewelry and art, one-of-a-kind silver and gold jewelry designed and crafted right here on the peninsula. But you were a jewelry maker in Germany before you came?
Yeah.
You apprenticed there?
I did an apprenticeship for 1 year, and then I actually studied jewelry design in Germany for 3.5 years after that. So it has been a journey, that's for sure. Yeah.
Oh. Betty Lou is wearing
my
earrings.
Louisa Mack originals.
Lovely. Showing off each other's work. So has it been... Because you're here, it's a little isolated here. Has it been comfortable working here? Has it been easy to get supplies and all of this kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's been fine. You know, I just go online and there's jewelry suppliers that I order from. And it's actually been really great service. So I don't have any problems getting materials. And something that's new and exciting is that I've been able to get some of the local gold. I don't know if you have heard about that, but
no,
Cape Disappointment has some gold hiding in the sand. And I've been able to get some from a friend of a friend who's mined it and filtered it out of the sand.
Holy cow. I've been
able to work with it and fuse it to my silver and spark up my designs.
God. You know, you're going to start a gold rush here on the peninsula. Better not go any further as to where it is. That is so exciting, though. Holy cow. This is brand. Did you know that, Betty Lou?
I didn't know that until I went to Louisa's gallery. I was amazed.
Very exciting. And you tend to know about these
everything.
Earth and water and all that natural stuff. So, and you have, you're hosting Penny Treat in your gallery now. I love it.
Yeah, Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. So Penny's going to be there showing her watercolors and her mono prints. She does the woodblock prints. And so I always have a couple of her pieces in my gallery, but she will bring more stuff down for the studio tour.
And Penny and our next guest is Maria Powell, who had a show at Riversea last month or 2 months ago. It was a fabulous show. And they were here on Arts Live and Local to talk about it, too. But it was they had stuff hanging from the ceiling, which was quite quite glorious.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Yeah, yeah. So Marie Powell Gallery right there. So they have the same address, 177 Howerton. This is down on the dock. Is that
on the waterfront?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. So Marie's on the waterfront, and I'm around the corner on the street side of the building.
But it's down there on Howerton, which is by the water.
Yes.
Right. And Marie's stuff is just gorgeous, too, the prints. And then Skywater Gallery, Cindy Kalasowski.
It's a new gallery. And she's got, I think, 26 artists.
Oh.
And she's an artist herself.
Oh,
that's
I see.
Down on the other end of the waterfront in Owako.
Okay.
It was Nautical Brass. You might have remembered it from that.
Well, you can't get lost.
No, just walk down the waterfront.
There's just one long road, whether you're on the water side or the other side, you look for. Oh, that's exciting.
She's a wonderful person. And her partner, Larry, is also an artist. I don't know as much about his work. She's developed a technique to put photographs on rice paper, so transparent, and then mount them on glass. And it's really pretty.
Fantastic. Folks, this is all at your fingertips or eye tips. Next weekend, next Friday, that's the day after Thanksgiving, November 23rd and 24th. It's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And about half of the venues will be open on Sunday as well.
Oh, good.
On the map, they're starred.
It tells. Okay. So get yourself a map. Tell them one more time where they can find the map.
Okay.
Besides the real one. Well, oh, wait. I see it right here. Beachartist.org, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Or if you're on the peninsula, Skywater Gallery, Long Beach Visitors Bureau, Ocean Park Chamber, and Bay Avenue Gallery all have the maps.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming in. I hope to see you next weekend.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Show.
Thank you.
My guests, Betty Lou Kraus and Louisa Mack. Huh, look at all these German names, I'm telling you. Okay, enjoy. And that, again, is next weekend. Well, you don't have to wait that long for exciting stuff. My next guest is going to come right in, and you know this guy, but you may not have heard much of his own personal music. Joey Altruda tomorrow evening at Kala. Remember Bob Piles tonight, tomorrow night. Joey Altruda is bringing the Scatolites for Ska Storia. I love it. Have a listen and stay tuned. Coast Community Radio. Well, in case you can't sit still, you don't have to, because Joey never sits still either. Joey Altruda is my guest for a change. Joey's usually on this side of the board because he's one of the KMUN programmers. Welcome, Joey.
Hey, hey, Carol.
So
thanks for having me.
What the heck are you doing? Now, we've still got your music on. What am I listening to?
Okay, if you listen carefully to the saxophone player right now for just a moment. That is Roland Alfonso, who was one of the creators and leaders of the Scatolites. And he's performing this song with my band, Jump With Joey, from a CD that we recorded together 25 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow.
I had a long friendship with Roland and toured Japan with him as a guest.
And what were you doing?
I was leading the band. This band you're listening to is called Jump With Joey. It's a band that I led for 10 years. It was inspired by the Scatolites. The Scatolites are still around with a couple of the founding members.
Tell us, for those uninitiated,
yes.
What is ska?
Okay.
Who are the Scatolites?
Okay.
You have a few minutes?
Yes, okay.
Give us the whole history.
In a nutshell, ready, go.
Yeah.
The Scatolites were a band that came together in Jamaica in about 1964. They were short-lived. They were only a year and a half together, but then they disbanded for 17 years until they got back together in 83. They created a music called ska music, which was its own style of rhythm, as you could hear, with an emphasis on the upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was music that was brought to us to celebrate Jamaica's independence from England in 1964. And it brought us the music of the Wailers.
Before there
was reggae music.
Right.
And it was the precursor of what became reggae music 5 years later.
Well, what's amazing about this is I think I would bet that most people out there have no idea of any of this history. Many people who are, you know, devoted to reggae music, who listen regularly or play it or go to concert, of course.
But
most people, and ska, I had not heard the term until KMUN. I got the term, but I
did
not know this.
Yeah, it's not that commonly known as a genre, really. I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, it is not a household word like reggae would
be.
Right. And, you know, it's because it was very short-lived. It had its kind of a revival in the late 70s that was kind of infused and inspired with the energy of what happened in the punk rock revolution from England, with several key bands kind of making it popular again with a little different twist on it. And then toward the late 80s, people like me and other band leaders and musicians in different cities like New York and LA and things started playing the traditional style of ska. And the ska music was born out of rhythm and blues music of New Orleans, and rhythm and blues music with the emphasis on the backbeat of the 50s, which was very popular in Jamaica in the 50s. They were the very first mobile DJs bringing records and record players around to parties and events.
Wow.
Very first. They were the first with a lot of things. And
Where were you? I mean, can I go back to
sure.
that first?
Sure.
You should also let people know you are you play a lot of instruments, but here you're a bass player.
Yeah, I'm an acoustic bass player and the arranger of a lot of this music.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where were you living? Where did you come from?
Okay.
I know you do a radio show here, but I don't think you talk about yourself very much. So who the heck are you?
Yeah, I...
Where does this music come from?
Once in a while, a person will phone in and ask me to play a piece of my own, so I
mm-hmm.
do that on my show. But
a lot of people don't realize because they've seen you as a DJ.
That's right.
And they don't even realize you're a musician. I remember the first time I saw that and now it keeps growing and growing.
Yeah, it does.
So,
well, I originally reigned from the San Gabriel Valley, which is a suburb of Los Angeles, and Sunset Beach, California, which is the neighboring beach of Huntington Beach. And between those two places, I was nurtured in music, and I've been part of the LA music, underground music scene since 1980, 81. I've had a professional career in music, and I've played several genres of music over the years, ranging from rockabilly and post-punk kind of experimental music into Jamaican music, tropical music, music of Cuba, music of Brazil, jazz, traditional styles of genres of jazz, so subcategories, and Americana. I've been a record collector since I was six, almost 50 years. So okay. The record collecting would feed my curiosity about how do I learn how to play this? Because I would get so turned on by a specific thing I would find.
And that's part of what I was wondering is, a person of your age, was that a quote normal path to follow?
No. Not
Thank
at all.
Thank you.
Not
I feel better because it's a shock to me. So.
It was a bit strange, you know, collecting used items of any sort, but like records and, you know, typically in the world of, like for my era, Beatles and Led Zeppelin and those types of things and corporate rock, arena rock. And then what happened with punk rock, of course, gave liberty to everything. But, you know, what's fascinating is like, you know, people gave me some hard times growing up for not liking just what everyone else likes. Right. But, you know, it paid off in the end. But what's interesting about the Jamaican music is that it was not distributed to us when it was new music. That's the point I was right about to get. And we didn't get the Skatalites music in 1964 because we didn't have a Jamaican population. Only in Toronto and Brooklyn. And maybe Miami, too, where some of those records distributed.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until the 80s when they got reissued that it became a nationwide distribution. So I became friends with a man named Sir Coxone Dodd. His name was Clement Dodd. He was like the Berry Gordy of Jamaica. His production house, Studio One, was like the Motown of Jamaica, if you will. He put together the Skatalites. He discovered the Wailers before it was Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Yeah.
It was like 1963, produced their first like 50 or 60 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And he discovered every major star of Jamaica for about 30 years. And we became close friends. And I was shown this music by a friend of mine who was English but lived in L.A. because there was such a West Indian influx in the 60s into Britain that they started distributing these records in England, and that's how they had it. So it took a British guy to come over to Los Angeles in the 80s to sit down with me and say, here's the original stuff.
Wow.
You know some of the revival acts of the late 70s from Britain, but here's what it is.
That was exciting.
It was terribly exciting. The music was so rustic sounding and archaic in its way. It sounded like it was way older than it actually was at the time. And I had no idea that these musicians were still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And flash forward 5 years after the fact, I started this band and a promoter came to me and said, I'm friends with Roland Alfonso of the Skatalites. I'd like to bring him to LA to perform with your band. And the story just continued on as basically a handful of different people from the originators came to play with my band over the years and make recordings and tour Japan with me. And my band Jump With Joey made 4 CDs and toured Japan 4 times. And but I guess it was 2007. I don't know how old I am now. When I was about 42, I guess it was around 13 years ago almost, I was presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award for my contribution to the preservation of Jamaican music. And I was the only non-Jamaican recipient of this, included with all of these founders.
Fantastic.
It blew my mind.
Quite the honor,
I was completely speechless. I had no idea it was happening. It came to me at a gig at the end of the show.
They brought
it out, and I was like, I don't even know what to say. And I had never won any prize or trophy before or since. So, wait a minute, but my life's not over.
And
I'm only 42.
But you are so deeply into this music that you're not looking at it from the outside and all those all the accolades and stuff. You're just making the music. So when you were doing the Jump with Joey band, were there other bands doing that kind of stuff in the LA area? Where?
At first there wasn't, but there were younger bands that were trying to do it, and they saw what we were doing, and they saw that they were playing by ear, trying to sort out how to do this by ear, and it was a little scrappy, but the spirit was really there, and they were like high school age people, high school, college age. We were in our mid-20s to mid to late 20s.
The elders.
Kind of, in a way, but you see, the difference was, like the Scatolites, they were arrangers. We arranged the music. We wrote it down as a band arrangements.
Yeah.
And these kids saw the difference in the quality of the performance because of it.
Right.
And a lot of them went on to further educate themselves in how to play their instruments or how to prepare the music for a better result.
Wonderful.
And I've seen some of these guys come up and, wow, I mean, they have full-on careers in composition and arrangement now in their 40s.
Fantastic.
It really was special for me.
What a legacy. Absolutely.
Really,
and now you're here. And you've only been here, what?
A year now.
A year.
I've been here a year.
That's hard to believe, Joey, because you're all over the place. Yeah. And so here's what's happening tomorrow evening. I'm going to put on now. Tell folks what they're going to hear right
now. We're going to pay a tribute to the Scatolites tomorrow night by playing a lot of their repertoire. And this is a tune you're going to hear. It's called Man in the Street by Don Drummond and the Scatolites. He was the star trombone player and wrote a lot of songs with them. And we were featuring Oliver Charles, one of those teenagers who's now 43. He's been Ben Harper's drummer for many years, and he's been my drummer on and off over the years. And featuring musicians of Buddy J. Kiefer's Jamaican Jazz Band from Portland, who are also steeped in this tradition, are coming to create this band.
Fantastic.
And we will converge tomorrow afternoon to run this material down for the first time all together and perform it 4 hours afterwards.
Fantastic. And the performance will be, again, this is at Gala in Astoria. That's 1017 Marine Drive. And the show is at...
Doors open at 7. Band starts around 8-ish.
Okay.
We have a fantastic DJ named El Sesky, who dwells and lives in Portland, but he's from the San Diego and L.A. scene originally as a record collector and DJ. He's fantastic. He's going to be spinning music.
Now, can people still get tickets at Liberty Astoria?
No. They're going to have to walk up. Tickets at the door.
Okay.
And a portion of this proceeds will go to Feeding Empty Bellies in Astoria, which I just love.
Thank you.
What Corey has created and everyone involved in that. It's incredible.
Yeah, I remember that's where I first saw you playing live music.
Yeah.
Was at their benefit. And I went, wait, Joey, you don't play music.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here, for bringing all of this richness, and for telling us a little bit of that backstory.
Absolutely. By the way, I'm going to make this an annual summertime event with several bands from Seattle and Portland eventually.
Fantastic.
And we're going to make it a scene.
And it will be most welcome.
Thank
Joey
you,
Altruda,
Carol.
Tell folks when you're on the air.
I am on the air every other Tuesday on Rhythm Lounge from 8:30 to 10:30. I will be filling in for Spinnin' Lynn this Tuesday, and then I will be following with my regular slot the following Tuesday and continuing every other Tuesday.
Terrific.
Thanks,
Carol.
Thank
you so much, Joey.
Thanks, everybody.
And I'm going to keep this music going a little bit, but I am going to tell you that the Coaster Theater is opening Wizard of Oz tonight. The Tolovana Arts Colony, don't forget Clem Stark with John and Jay. North Coast Chamber Orchestra is at the Performing Arts Center in Astoria, 16th and Franklin, at 7 o'clock. And then on Sunday at St. Catharines in Nehalem at 3 with Souvenirs of Summer. Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum has an opening for Graveyard of the Pacific from 5 to 7 tonight. Peninsula Players, this is last weekend, tonight, tomorrow night at 7, Sunday at 2, Black Comedy and Sun Also Rises. Columbia Theater in Longview, Seattle International Comedy competition. Bob Pyle at Kala, Crown Alley Irish Pub, Music Tonight and Tomorrow Night. Shakespeare's at the Chinook School. That's the real festival actors. Hoffman has the movie Kicking Bird. Peninsula Pack has a happy hour. Tomorrow, Sou'wester has happenings all day. Cannon Beach Gallery has an opening reception in the evening for miniatures. NCRD, Riverbend Players at 7 and Sunday at 2 with the live radio play It's a Wonderful Life. I think it's the last weekend. Joey Altruda at Kala with Ska Storia, Seaside Library, Jim Alberg, and Star of the Sea has Ed Chase, our own Ed Chase. Klatskanai Middle School on